This hour, Martin Simpson, Tom Utes, we're going to talk to both of them about their brand new album, Nothing But Green Willow, the songs of Mary Sands and Jane Gentry. I'll start off with a tune that they selected. As I've told you before, the process here is the artist picks three tunes, three songs from the most recent release, and we kind of build in and around that. And it works out pretty well, especially when you have such deep thinking and comprehensive guests as Tom Utes and Martin Simpson. By the way, Martin's in England when we're doing this, and Tom is not, and I am not. So we're going to start off this part of the program with Come All You Fair and Tender Ladies. This is Steve Martin. You're back on Unreal Bluegrass, and this is that song, and we're going to have some nice chat with Martin Simpson and Tom Utes. Thank you so much for tuning in. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard Fair and Tender Ladies, a song off of a soon-to-be-released album from my guests today, Martin Simpson and Tom Utes. Let me get the name of the album, Nothing But Green Willow, the songs of Mary Sands and Jane Gentry. It's on Topic Records. And so Tom Utes has been a guest on Unreal Bluegrass so many times, and the audience knows that. Martin Simpson, I've never had the pleasure. So you're actually calling in from what you told us before we went on the air, the
I'm on the Isle of Skye. Looking at the sea, it is so beautiful here. And it's, of course, aberrant weather. It's about 23 degrees, which it shouldn't be on the Isle of Skye in September. But hey, you know.
Well, you're the first call I've ever had from the Isle of Skye. I've had Australia, I've had France, I've had Italy, but you're the first one from the Isle of Skye. Tom, you're probably where I usually talk to you.
I'm here about 25 miles east of Nashville in my house, close to the Percy Priest Lake, and I'm looking at a couple of old guitars right now, which is nice, too. Not as nice as what Martin's looking at.
Well, both of you have beat me to heck, because I'm looking at my microphone and a bunch of acoustic padding as I sit in my little place where I do this show. But I can imagine that I'm there with you, and I appreciate the fact that you're absorbing. 23 degrees is kind of chilly. It is kind of chilly, isn't it?
No,
well,
23 degrees Celsius. This is it's about 75 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that.
Well, the way you said it. So I love this new album. It's I mentioned it as we were getting into our discussion. There are 13 songs on this, and what an absolutely gorgeous collection of songs. And Tom and Martin, they're playing guitar. Each one of them sings a couple of tunes, one or two. We'll get to that a little bit later. But tell a story, and I will say this. I wanted to give credit. Tom Utes and I were talking before Martin called in. Ted Olson wrote almost 13 pages of what I think is the greatest liner notes I've ever read to describe the process and where these songs originated from and how they were preserved. And it's all of that. And I will say this too. I will mention as we go through some artists that I think the bluegrass people would know readily. And you can guess what those are, but everybody that's come onto this project that I listen to and all of the vocalists, they are absolutely 100% into the feel and the sound of the songs that you're recording. I just think every time I listen to it, I think it's more beautiful than the time before.
Well, I have to say, I feel exactly the same about the record. It was such a funny thing when Tom and I talked about it to start with, to say, well, so what we'll do then is we'll each pick six songs, and we'll each pick five singers, and we'll assign the songs to the singers, and it'll all be all right, won't it? And you think about it, it could have been horribly wrong. People could have said, I don't want to sing that. But nobody did. Everybody just completely rose to the occasion. And I think everybody's so on top of their game. The performances are beautiful.
That's the only word you can describe. Tom, I listened to the vocals. I will mention some of the names that will pop up throughout the album. And we're not going to cover every tune. We want to get the feel for it. I want one of you or both of you to tell me in a synopsis of how Ted describes how these songs were preserved and how they became found by you. But just for the listening audience, Sierra Hull and Justin Moses are very well known. Tim O'Brien, Dale Ann Bradley, Tammy Rogers, and the vocals that they... And Dale Ann Bradley is just like, she might as well be right in that environment. And everything is so perfect to what I think the culture is you're trying to bring through in these songs. Sierra Hall absolutely kills the song that she does. And she has a beautiful voice, but this is like, I'm going to be this type of mood for this song. And I think everybody is absolutely in that frame of mind. But I said that already, but I just think it's a beautiful thing. And Martin, you agree. Tom, tell me a little bit about Tom, Ted Olson, and try to help us describe, because I can't read the entire liner notes, how this process, either one of you tell me how this process came to be that the songs were preserved and then later came to your attention and then Martin's attention.
Yeah, I'll start and then I'll let Martin take over. So these are songs that an Englishman called Cecil Sharp, who was a folk song collector, collected in 1916 and 1918 in southwestern Appalachia, in western North Carolina, in Virginia, in east Kentucky, and in east Tennessee. These songs were English ballads that people in England, for the most part, didn't remember anymore. He couldn't find them in England, but he knew through an acquaintance, Oliver Dane Temple, in east Tennessee, that these songs existed in southwestern Appalachia. So he came here with his assistant, and they traveled as far as they could by train, but then they had to go on foot, on horseback, from farm to farm, wherever somebody said, hey, over there is somebody who knows the song. And they collected these songs. He wrote down the music, and his assistant, Mark Coppellis, wrote down the lyrics, and they released them in this amazing collection, English Folk Songs from the Southern Appalachians, that's pretty much as close to the horse's mouth as we can get from today's perspective of, we can't listen to these, to the way they heard these songs because they didn't have any recording equipment to carry. This is music, Appalachian music, that predates bluegrass and predates old-time country music and is a direct link between the old world and our idea was to pick these songs from two singers, Jane Gentry being one who contributed over 80 songs to this collection, and Mary Sands who contributed about 40. And that's a large number. Nobody else contributed that much. And they only lived, as we later found out, they only lived about 10 miles apart from each other in Hot Springs, North Carolina. And nobody knows if those two women knew each other. But we know today from this collection that they changed the course of what we call folk music today. And Martin and I just couldn't, we were just so fascinated with that we decided we were going to do something with that. And the angle was those two women, Jane Gentry and Mary Sands. And I'll let Martin take it from here.
Well, the thing that really strikes me, I know that we're going to play one of the songs next, which is The Wagoner's Lad. And The Wagoner's Lad is a song that I've actually known since I was in my early teens. And I knew it because in 1928, it was commercially recorded. Ewell Kazee was recorded playing the banjo and singing The Wagoner's Lad, and it appears on Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music, in the ballads department, in fact. And, I mean, it is such an iconic song. It's a song which is composed of what are often called floating verses, verses that turn up in lots of songs. But Ewell Kazee, who was a very bright man indeed, he called them vagrant stanzas, which I think is so poetic and so beautiful. So, you know, I first heard Ewell Kazee sing this song, and then in Clarence Ashley's version of The Cuckoo Bird, these verses appear, and 10 years earlier, it was being collected by Cecil Sharp from these ladies in North Carolina.
And so, do I get this correctly? And you make a good point, Tom, right away, that we don't really know how these things were sung, but I think that what you're saying from this preserved music, the singers and the music that's being played around them, the attempt is to be pretty much straight on what would have been sung.
Well, these songs would have been presented to Cecil Sharp a cappella without any instrumental accompaniment.
Okay.
So, in the collection, all you can see in terms of the musical notation is the vocal melody.
Okay.
So Martin and I worked off of the most basic version of the vocal melodies and then decided to just accompany these songs with just two guitars. Every once in a while there's a banjo or a fiddle or a mandolin, but that's pretty much it. And Martin is one of the greatest guitar players in the world, but he plays finger style with his right hand and mostly in open tunings, and I play more of traditional bluegrass flat picking style, so with the flat pick and in standard tuning. So our playing styles are vastly different, but they really work, and it's together, and it's another beautiful thing to me, you know, that such a distinct style of English guitar playing and a distinct style of American guitar playing comes together and depends these songs that are of English origin, but people in America have sung them and preserved them. And we also recorded half of the album here in Nashville. The American singers were recorded here, and the British singers, the English singers, were recorded in England. So we flew together to England right after the Nashville session.
Was,
so it's a constant back and forth, a constant exchange.
That was another part I didn't want to leave unsaid, that you're crossing the ocean, you're doing things to collect these songs and making these choices. So the melody line, which was the preserved part, as you said, and by the way, Martin Simpson, Tom Utes are both two of the finest guitars you're ever going to hear. And I will tell you this too, the what you choose to play behind these melodies, which I think we're agreeing are pretty much straight down the line as much as they can be, is just beautiful. You're able to do it when you're both on the same song. You're able to do it, complement each other, but not in any way overpower this little but this gorgeous line that we have from the melody that's been preserved on the sheet music. So I just want to compliment on that. I know how good you are. And just kind of like you're just there, not only working with each other, but with the vocalist and maybe sometime a fiddle player or somebody else. But it's just done so well. It's so tasteful. You know, you don't have to overpower a singer. You don't have to overpower the song itself. You just help it. You just help it and do a beautiful job of putting those things together.
It was such a joy to sit down with Tom for the first time. I mean, he picked me up at the airport and we went to my hotel, dropped me off for 15 minutes, and then we went to his house where the studio is, and he started to play me his version of the Gypsy Laddies. As he said, you know, standard tuning with the flat pick. And I just loved the feel of it, and I could slot straight in playing the way that I play. And within 5 minutes, I just knew that this project was going to work, you know. And that's a great feeling. A great feeling.
I like to give as much credit as I can to other people that appear that I don't know, because I'm using these opportunities to learn. The song that we played before we started discussing, Fair and Tender Ladies, is sung by Emily Portman. Don't know her at all. Several of these people I don't know. But what
it's actually, it's sung by Cara Dillon.
Cara Dillon, okay.
Yeah. Cara is a Northern Irish singer from a very traditional background, actually. So she sings, her voice is ridiculous. It's so beautiful. And she sings in this very understated Northern Irish traditional way. Perfect.
Yeah. I'm sorry I misstated her name, because the way you describe that vocal is what I hear from everybody that contributes to these. It's just that your words were the best at it. I can't reproduce. I can't even restate them. But beautiful vocals by her. Also, as I misstated, the very first tune, Fair Annie, is Emily Portman. Another beautiful voice I don't know. I also don't know a little bit about Odessa Settles. Again, another gorgeous vocal taken. Seth Lakeman. And there's others. I'm going to get to those in a little bit. But all of these vocals, you described it, Martin, is they're singing that, I don't want to call it straight. It's not like they don't have the opportunity to embellish or add their own feelings to it, but that it's that gorgeous voice that just, I don't know, goes through me every time I hear this.
Well, I think it has something to do with the weight of the material. The material is so strong.
Yeah.
And everybody who's on this record is so respectful of traditional music that everybody gets out of the way and leaves their ego at the studio door. And trust me, if they wouldn't do it, they wouldn't be on this project, because Martin and I are so respectful of this tradition and love it so much that it's not a vehicle for anybody's ego. It's to It's like Norman Blake says, somebody has to do something with the old songs for them to stay alive. And we wanted to do something new, and we take it sort of also as a, maybe a little bit of the responsibility to reinterpret those songs so they stick around. They can linger in a book, but they don't really come to life in a book. You have to perform them and sing them and all that.
And it's preserve
the best,
them.
The best one I can think of.
Yeah. Martin, you mentioned the song we're going to go to second. I want to do that now because we've been filling a lot of information out about different people on the album and some of the sources. But I want you had mentioned Wagner's Lad is something that you heard. Can either one of you, Martin, can you do an intro to that? Then I'll cut to that song and I'll come back. And I'm not finished with you by far, but I want to play this song.
Well, good.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell do a little bit of an intro for that tune for me, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, the Wagner's Lad is just, I think, one of the classics Anglo-American folk songs. It's absolutely perfect in its brevity, and it contains, I mean, the political nature of the first two verses is actually quite staggering, I think, and it's very beautiful.
And you sing, play guitar on this one. There's a couple where Tom plays guitar and also sings, but so on this one, Martin, when we play this, we're going to be hearing your vocal and your guitar, and also with Tom on his guitar. That's pretty accurate.
That's correct.
Yeah, exactly okay. It. Yeah.
Let's do Wagner's Lad. I'll be right back. I'm talking to Martin Simpson and Tom Utes. So we're talking about their new album, Nothing But Green Willow, the songs of Mary Sands and Jane Gentry. Beautiful, beautiful album. Absolutely beautiful. Let's play Wagner's Lad and be right back in a second.
Unreal Bluegrass, coming to you from the Gold Tone Music Group studio.
All right, there it was. Martin Simpson gave us a nice lead up to Wagner's Lad.
I just want to say real quick about Bill Kazee and the Wagner's Lad. Bill Kazee was a banjo player from Kentucky, and that might be interesting to your listeners. And he recorded the song in 1928 for the Vocalion label. He recorded it in New York. And then he was very popular for a while, and then he quit playing and became a preacher. And then he was rediscovered during the folk revival of the 60s and started playing again. But he was a very, very smart man. He had some incredible things to say about religion and an unbelievable musician that is one of the unsung heroes of American folk music.
Well, thanks for that.
I agree.
How do you find a recording from 1928 by some guy? I don't know. This doesn't mean anything. I don't know a lot of people. But how do you come across those things to be able to sample from him later?
You know, what's most amazing to me is that, I mean, as I say, I heard it when I was in my teens on the Anthology of American Folk Music. I was absolutely jaw-dropped to find a few years ago that there are lengthy films of Buell Kazee, which were made in the 1960s, of him talking about his music, demonstrating his banjo playing. I mean, amazing to see Buell Kazee in the 1960s.
You're going to have to spell his name for me so I can look it up. I'm listening, but tell me.
B-U-E-L-L-K-A-Z-E-E, Buell Kazee.
Right.
Not a bad name either, is it?
No.
It's a pretty good name. It's a great name. Tom, we know that we had a fiddle in with Tammy Rogers on Married and Single Life, and I know that you write and record with Tammy, and most of the audience knows that, and they also certainly would always remember her as being an integral part of the Steel Drivers, but and Tammy does it. Another beautiful. Everybody's bought, you described it so well, Martin, but everybody's bought into this preserving, I would call it the line of the vocal, that they're just kind of dead on it in that beautiful, gorgeous voice. But I really enjoy hearing from Tammy on this. And there are other songs on here with people that we know. Tim Stafford is on a couple songs, at least one playing music and singing harmony. And like I mentioned, Tim O'Brien, Dale Ann Bradley, again, absolutely nails the feel, I think, of what you guys are going through. And maybe you said it best, that if they weren't willing to, I hate overusing the term buy-in, but if they weren't willing to leave whatever it is at the door they needed to get to this purity, or they wouldn't be part of the project.
Yeah, you know, the thing that, I mean, Tammy's one of my best friends, and I love writing and playing with her, but that I wanted her to sing this song, Married and Single Life, because it predates the Carter Family's version of Single Girl, Married Girl that they recorded at the Bristol Sessions in 1927, but there's, I mean, it's obviously
it's a different song, but it's obviously also the same song in the way that folk songs are different and the same. And I wanted Tammy to sing it because Tammy still remembers her grandmother telling her about seeing the Carter family in the 30s in schoolhouses and courthouses all over East Tennessee. And so Tammy and I are both hugely into the Carter family. And whenever I find a new photo of Mabel or Sarah or AP, I text it to her. And I know that it meant a lot to her to sing this song that goes, that has so much to do with her family. What's also interesting about this song is that it's written, the lyric is written from a male perspective, but she's singing it as a woman. And people back then didn't have so much of an issue with that, as we can see, because the song was also sung to Cecil Sharp by a woman, by Jane Gentry. And I like the fact that these songs allow singers to shapeshift a little more than modern music that is so often fairly narrowly defined.
Yeah.
And I'd love for Martin to talk a little bit about that too, about the musical ways of expanding the original versions of these songs.
Well, I think to say that these songs are powerful is understating it. I think they're essential. There is so much of the gravity of being human preserved in the stories that these songs are telling. And we talked about Emily Portman a little bit, who sings the first ballad on there, Fair Annie. Fair Annie is one of the darkest, darkest stories when you think about it. It's about a woman whose husband has gone off to find a new wife. And when he comes home with his new wife, she is expected to be his servant. But it turns out that the new wife is actually Fair Annie's sister. Mm. And the way that Emily Portman sings the verse, which is about the realization that these two women who have been subject to such vile treatment are actually sisters and can win. It's a brilliant performance. It's a brilliant piece of singing. And it's a fantastic end to the story, if you like. It's a movie in 3.5 minutes.
And it's a story of female empowerment that's 500 to 600 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I love this history. Everything you guys are, I try to learn so much from people. Well, Tom knows that. I'm always trying to find new information from guests. And Martin, you're helping me along those ways. And I just think this is such, I do not know Seth Lakeman. Can you tell me about how he wound up on this project?
Seth's one of the young guns of the English folk scene. He's actually he has been very successful as a solo artist. He's worked with Robert Plant and all kinds of people, you know, as a fiddle player. I mean, he's basically like a rock and roll folk fiddle player, if you like. He's got tremendous drive, really, really declamatory singer. And he came into the studio to do the song Edward, shot from being at a folk festival and singing his brains out, basically. But the fact that his voice was a little, you know, under stress when he recorded it, to my mind, it just adds to the strength of the performance. It's so strong.
Go ahead, Tom. You were going to talk. I think I interrupted you.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just so in awe of all the English singers that we recorded with, and the purity with which they delivered those songs, and also the knowledge that they have about those old songs was really inspiring to me. And I just tried to stay out of the way and learn as much as I could. And God, Martin talking about Emily Portman, I mean, these people have know how to insert a sense of dynamics into a song that's like the movement of the little finger or something. It's like magic that people can sing like that. And it's just Martin and I both sort of grew up in the music business backing up great singers, and it was so much fun doing that together and realizing that we both learned the same lesson on the same lessons on different sides of the Atlantic, backing up very different people. But if you want to be a good sideman, you have to listen to people breathing to all of that. And Martin is such an expert at that. And it was great to do that together and know that it works.
It really was. I mean, I always think of Odessa Settle's performance, you know, because that is a groundbreaking performance. And for Odessa to bring her background of gospel singing, that intensity of style that she has. And, you know, we sat down with her. I'd never met Odessa before, obviously. We sat down with her and we said, what key do you want this in, Odessa? And she said, well, I don't know. So I think we tried it in three different keys, and then we did it maybe twice. And by the third time, that was it. We did it. We got that performance. And it was by listening, as Tom said, and he's so right, listening for the intake of breath. You know when the next note's going to fall because you're listening that hard to the singer. And what a privilege and what a joy it is to make something like that happen.
You know, I'm talking to Tom Utes and Martin Simpson about their new release, Nothing But Green, Will of the Songs of Mary Sands and Jane Gentry. And I want people, because I think that's the purpose of it, I want people to focus on the history and the amazing songs that are being preserved. But I do want, I would say this to people when you get the CD. Listen through it for the songs and the vocals. Listen to it many times after that to pick up the nuance and the skill that Tom and Martin put into backing up these players, these singers. Because I think it's worth doing that just to say, now I'm going to have a guitar player's mentality. And I'm going to listen again and listen to the both of them play off of each other. I think that's good advice and probably should be followed several times, people that might get this album.
I agree.
Well, I didn't think you would disagree, but I wanted to get that out there. Hey, listen, tell me more about, we've talked about Odessa. Let's talk about, wait a minute, I just saw it. I flipped my page over. I'm going to pronounce her last name incorrectly, but I know it was one that was recorded in England. Faye, is it Heald or Heald?
Heald. It's
okay.
Exactly that.
Okay.
Faye's fantastic. She is a good friend of mine. She's a professor of folk music at Sheffield University. And she comes from a background of singing traditional songs in folk clubs. And she's also utterly brilliant. I mean, she's an academic. She's fantastic. But what was really funny about Faye, she was the first person to whom I assigned a song. I thought, she will love this song, I Whipped My Horse. I know she will because she has strange taste in songs. So I suggested that she try it, and she just got back to me and said, yep, absolutely. When she came into the studio, she was the one person that had made a major musical shift. And what she'd done is she'd changed the time signature of the verses, kept the melody in exactly as it was recorded, but she changed it so that the verses are in 3/4, and then, i.e. a waltz, and then it moves, it shifts, and goes into 2/4, I think, or maybe 4/4. But it's totally charming, and it absolutely enlivens the song, I think.
I think there's got to be a follow-up to this, don't you think, guys? Don't you have a lot of material and a lot of things to further explain? Or am I wrong on that? Or
that's a nice idea.
There you go.
Well, I'm doing what I can to get Martin back over here as soon as we can.
Yeah.
I think you should do some original songs just on the information in the liner notes or that whole story. There's a billion songs, and those relationships between the people and how the songs and what happened. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff for historical writers like you guys.
Well, we talked about making a record of original songs about birds, and I think we're going to work on that. But I also want to mention to you, I think it might be cool for your listeners to know that a professor from East Tennessee State University called Ted Olson wrote the liner notes, 13 pages of liner notes that really explain the project, and he brings such a depth and breadth of knowledge to this project. He's a wonderful guy. He wrote the only meaningful book on the Bristol Sessions, or the only book actually on the Bristol Sessions, and it's a marvelous book. And he also wrote the liner notes for the box set of the Bristol Sessions. So there's a lot of information in there. Really, really valuable.
And he's a great writer. I mean, not only is it packed with information about how these particular songs on this album were gathered and preserved and how they wind up where they are, he's a great writer. I mean, you've not only got great songs, but the man can write to where you just want to keep reading and reading. Like, there's almost 12 and a half, almost 13 pages of really well-written stuff about the whole story of where how these songs were, as you've described, kind of preserved and moved along on their own. It was like they had their own power. They just kind of kept moving around until somebody could find them and put them on record. But what a great, the whole thing is just so well put together, so well put together. Tell me about Angeline Morrison. I don't know her either.
Oh, Angeline Morrison is fascinating. Angeline has spent her entire life. She's, I think she's Anglo-Scots and Caribbean background. She spent her entire life doing music in all kinds of different degrees. And she looked at the folk scene and the repertoire of English folk singers. And she said, well, where are people of color in any of these songs? Where are they? And she ended up researching black English history and writing an entire album called The Sorrow Songs, which is so groundbreaking. It's absolutely amazing. And she was so excited to do the Suffolk Miracle, which is a really creepy ghost story, you know. And she sings it with such purity, but such understanding of how spooky it is. I think it's a beautiful performance.
And, you know, Steve, it was also very important for us to point out that there is diversity in English folk music, as Angeline stands for, but also having Odessa Settles, who's an African-American lady from a very, very prominent gospel family, have her sing on this record, because Appalachia has never been one-dimensional. There's always been African-American coal mining towns and all of that, and now we have young artists like Amethyst Kia and people like that who are of African-American descent, who are absolutely redefining the music of the region, and I think that's super-duper important that we do that.
It is, and you're always reaching out like that, Tom. I'll say this for Tom, because I know him so well, that he's always looking to preserve bits and pieces and also write incredible songs, but also he has a nod toward historical bases sometimes, or maybe he's just writing a song about a particular event. But you're in your own way, Tom. You're preserving all those cultural bits. Before we go to the last song we're going to introduce, I know the album is on Topic Records. I assume people can find it there. Where else can they find it and information about First Tom Hughes? How do they find you and information on Ask Martin, how to reach him?
Well, the record will be released on September 29th on Topic Records, so people can just Google search Topic Records. It's a British and English folk label, the oldest one, actually, and they can order it through Amazon, they can listen to it on Apple Music or on Spotify, whichever. But I will say, I want people to hear the music, so by all means, stream it, listen to it any which way you want to. But if you want the full impact, you should read the liner notes and get that.
I have to
agree with that. I think I am equally as proud of the liner notes as I am of the music, because it's such an exposition of the importance of this music. I truly believe it is. I think what Ted Olson's done is of great historical importance, and I'm very proud to be associated with that.
It's great when you can put together a project like this that has the depth of the material and the artists who participate and get the depth and the culture of what's involved, and you also have, you know, let's face it, liner notes don't exist like this very often. You might get a couple, you might get some notes after a song, but it's nice to have something that is what I would say complete in the old sense, when we buy LPs and you could read the liner notes on the back and there's a lot more information. But I think this has the whole package that you might want to listen to. I think it's beautiful.
I agree.
It's just beautiful.
Gentlemen, I hate to do this, but I actually have to go and do a gig now.
Well,
so will you forgive me for slipping out of this interview?
I will forgive you. Do you have time to get us to Jacob's Ladder, or Tom, do you want to do that?
I can do that, Martin.
Right. I think Tom should do that.
All right. Hey, Martin, thanks so much. And we can find your music. You should just look up Martin Simpson. Martin.
Oh. I'm all over it.
Yes. All over it. All right. Thanks
very
so much.
Very easy to find.
Thank you,
guys. It's such a pleasure.
Thank you,
sir.
Talk
to you soon. Right. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Jacob's Ladder. We're going to do that, and then I'll let you go, too. I'm sorry I took so long that he got pushed against the gig, but, you know, sometimes I get lost in these things because they're so amazing. But let's you introduce Jacob's Ladder. That'll be the last song, and I'll let you go.
I always love talking to you, Steve. And, you know, given that Martin is on UK time, you know, where we have to maneuver all these different time zones, Eastern Central Time, UK time. But, so Jacob's Ladder is a song that a lot of bluegrass fans know from the Stanley Brothers version. And this version on this record predates the Stanley Brothers version by a couple hundred years or more than that. And, There's bits and pieces of the Stanley Brothers version in this song, but it's also very different. And, you know, Dalen Bradley is one of the greatest singers in the world, and I knew that making a record of songs that maybe didn't originate in Appalachia but survived in Appalachia and were changed in Appalachia, I would never want to make this without the queen. Appalachian singers. I mean, there's nobody who can sing, who can get inside a song like Dalen can. It's unbelievable, and she's a dear friend. I just love her to pieces, and I know she's had some health struggles recently, but she's out of it, and she's just a jewel. I can't say enough about her. She's just one of those people that I want to protect and hold close all the time because she's just such a wonderful human being, and she sings the fire out of Jacob's Ladder.
Is this the one that Tim Stafford joins on?
Yeah, I wanted somebody to sing with her, and I thought that Tim's vocal tone is very soft and her vocal very, very well. But it's also a mysterious song, you know, like in what it says. It's obviously a gospel song, but there's nothing obvious about these songs. Everything is a little hidden and mysterious, and I love all that.
I think that's right. I think mystery as we approach this project from the listener, I think is always good to keep in mind. But, she joins right in the crew. She's dead on the same sensibility that you need for these songs. I mean, it all just fits together. Listen, Tom Utes, I'm crazy about the work that you do. I'm so glad you gave me the opportunity to chat with you and Martin from across the ocean, and we're going to play Jacob's Ladder. I'll run into you again. I'm certain you'll have other things that you can share with the audience, and as always, you take care of yourself, and as we play Jacob's Ladder, I'll just say I'll see you down the road somewhere.
Thank you, Steve. I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Tom.